Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Hawk Blogger Mornings. I am Brian Nemhauser. You can find me and this show, all that we do, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, TikTok, Instagram at Hawk Blogger. Oh my God. I mean, how good does it feel to wake up on this Monday morning as a Seahawks fan? Congratulations, everybody. I mean, we're here. We made it to this point. And that's worth celebrating. Yes, they have not finished the ultimate task, but this is a pretty freaking big one. And we've talked about it all year. This is rare. It is not easy to finish with the best record in football, to finish with number one seed, home field advantage, a bye. Like, it's not easy. There's a lot of things that have to go right, not only with how you've assembled your football team, how you coach your football team, how those players have developed and trained, and health and opponents and schedule and all sorts of things have to line up. So enjoy it. I certainly am. I mean, I took yesterday off. That wasn't my intent. And taking it off is a little bit of a misnomer since I was pretty much doing Seahawks stuff all day. But I couldn't quite fit in a live show. So I took yesterday off in that regard. And it's probably for the best. I think I slept probably like 4 hours. You know, had a lot of other things on my mind, as I'm sure a lot of you did too. And if taking one day off feels this good, like, just imagine how the Seahawks are going to feel with 2 weeks. Now, they don't get 2 weeks off, but they get 2 weeks before they play their next football game. And we'll talk about who some of those opponents can be, what date those probably will be. Wait. Someone said something with the mic. Ah. That should be better. Folks, what an unfortunate start. Hopefully you guys can all hear me, even if it wasn't great. But yes, it's not better. Someone says it's not better. It's worse. Now it's better. Now it's better. All right. I'm telling you guys, we're going to figure this out. It just takes a little, you know, getting used to being back home. And yes, this is how you get to a podcast that is rocketing up the charts. It was sent to me today that this podcast ranks 18th in the football category for Apple Podcasts. That is insane what you guys are doing with this show. Independent show, not part of any like major platform where I'm getting boost from anybody else. Independent, we're ahead of like the Greenlight podcast of Chris Long, which is an excellent podcast. We're ahead of Football 301. We're ahead of like a ton of heavy hitting podcasts, and it's because of the great audio, like I was just doing here before. But honestly, it's you guys. So unbelievable how much excitement there is for this team, for the Seahawks. Anyway, what I was saying before I, thankfully, this great group told me my mic was messed up, is that we're going to talk about playoff seeding, where it finished as of yesterday, implications of who could play the Seahawks, when that game likely will be. I have a decent feel. We do have the 2026 opponents. We won't spend a ton of time on that, but I'll at least share that with you guys so we can talk about that. We have got some numbers to talk about because, you know, this is a numbers-related show, and there's some fun stuff there. Part of the reason I was a little late getting going is I've been doing all this DVOA sleuthing to pull up some things. We're going to talk about Charles Cross signing an extension. So we got a lot of stuff to talk about. The Mike McDonald Show will be on at 9:30 with Brock and Salk. Obviously, we'll all tune into that, see if there's any new news. Mike McDonald will have a 3:30 press conference with us. So I've got my questions for that. And then, we'll get into it. I've got some fun stuff planned, and we'll see what turns out. but it's going to be, I wouldn't say it's going to be hard to beat what happened last week, but no matter what happens in the future, that was so sweet. That was kind of the win that I think we've all wanted all year. And yes, they beat the Rams, and that was amazing. But this felt different. This felt like the Seahawks were far and away the best team on that football field on Saturday night, and everybody saw it. And they held San Francisco down like it was like a big brother, little brother kind of thing. And that's the kind of feeling that you'd get sometimes with the LOB era team. And we've seen it, this team do that to lesser teams. We haven't seen this team as much really sun a team with 13 wins or whatever they are. Like, so yeah, that was pretty special. And as a matter of fact, I don't think I have a quick way to do this, but I'm pretty sure that gives the Seahawks, at least ties them for the lead with the most wins over teams with at least 10 wins or 11 wins or something along those lines. I'll look it up later, but it wasn't that long ago that people were like, well, have the Seahawks beat any good teams? And it's like, well, Jacksonville and the Rams and the 49ers. And anyway, so whatever. It was fun. It was great. Let's start with this. Sorry, I'm just seeing if I missed anything on chat because I don't want to miss that I blew something again with audio. No, okay, we're good. The Seahawks officially finished the season ranked number one overall in DVOA and number one overall in defensive DVOA. There have only been five teams in the history of the NFL to accomplish that feat. And of those five teams, four of them went on to win a Super Bowl. So that's pretty cool. And there was a little question because the Rams and the Seahawks were very close in that regard. And who knows if like the way the Rams finished their game against the Cardinals was going to artificially raise them up, but it didn't. And so here's a look at the five teams who have done it before the Seahawks. You've got the 2023 Ravens. That should sound familiar. That is Mike McDonald's last year in Baltimore, where they lost in the conference championship. The 2013 Seahawks, we know them well. The 2002 Bucks, one of the best defenses of all time, along with that Seahawks team. The 1996 Packers and the 1985 Bears. That is pretty damn good company, folks. That is good company. And beyond that, the Seahawks also accomplished another rare feat. They finished not just first overall in defense, but they finished first in pass defense and rush defense in DVOA. That means that they are now part of a small fraternity of what is eight teams to have done that. The last team to do it was the 2018 Chicago Bears. I have to tell you, I didn't like it when I looked up that team to see, because I was trying to remember what that team was. They had a really good defense, obviously, and Mitchell Trubisky as their quarterback. So they lost in the first round. I think it was the wild card game. Maybe it was the divisional game. I don't know, whatever. But I didn't like that because the Mitch Trubisky thing felt a little close to home. But I think, you know, Sam clears. And you'll see some interesting teams on this list. The 1991 Eagles. That is, from a DVOA perspective, considered the best team ever, best defense ever. They did this. You've got, interestingly, the Bears sandwiched around 85, the 84 Bears and the 86 Bears, but not the 85 Bears, which is crazy. And then you got one of the Steel Curtain Steelers teams back in 79.
So it is a rare feat for them, for a team to do number one on offense and number one on defense. And then just before I came on, I was looking at the best defenses in the history of DVOA, history of that DVOA has tracked. And again, Eagles defense is the tops in history. Would you believe that the 2025 Seahawks are the 11th best defense in DVOA history and the best defense via DVOA in Seahawks history? They cleared the 2013 Seahawks. The 2013 Seahawks had a negative 0.238 DVOA. Negative is good because it means you're detracting from your opponent. So they were negative 2.38. The Seahawks are negative 2.42. So they are a little bit more negative than the 2013 squad. So I'm not saying they're better, but DVOA is. Just take a minute to reflect on that. Appreciate that. It is so hard in the moment while something's happening to actually recognize what you're doing and what you're getting. This is a special, special group. I just remembered something and I've got to send a text because, hold on. I got to see. I got to see when this Cable Thanos video is coming out. Because we got to watch that together. So it's a special defense, man. And whether it's better than the LOB squad or not, the fact that it's even a conversation that these defenses are in the same category, consider how fortunate you are, all of us are, to have two different defenses in the same franchise be at this level. Pretty cool. So now let's talk about some of the news that came out yesterday. Let's talk about some of the news that came out. Let's start with the Charles Cross news. I want to get into the playoff seedings, but I'll probably forget about the Charles Cross stuff if I don't talk about it now. So one of the things that happened yesterday, and of course, a number of things happened, was that Charles Cross had was reported to get an extension with the Seahawks, a 4-year extension worth $104.4 million, which is reported as a $26.1 million average per year. It is, quote, the largest non-QB contract in Seahawks history. He gets $40.5 million in year one. Okay, so that's the way these things work is the agent number is usually the one that comes out. The team and the agent both want to make it look, you know, like it's a good deal for the player. Like it's a benefit for everyone to feel that way. But you can be almost certain that the actual value of that deal is going to be anywhere from 3 to 5 million less than what is reported in the APY. So I think it's probably going to be 23 million would be my guess is the real average per year. And to give you an idea, this is a look at left tackles. This is a look at current top left tackle contracts by average per year. You've got Rashawn Slater at the top, 28.5 million. Trent Williams is still up there. Christian Darrisaw, Laremy Tunsil, Bernard Raymond, Andrew Thomas. So you start getting to like the Andrew Thomas, Jake Matthews, like that's around 23-22 million per year, and I'm guessing that's around where Charles Cross will be. I think that's a perfectly fine deal. And I mean, people that are like, ah man, maybe they should move on from Charles Cross, I don't know, man. Like, he's a 25-year-old left tackle that's been I think, just below Pro Bowl level. I think he's been a above average starting left tackle. I think he's really stepped up trying to be a leader this year. He loves being here. He's an incredibly hard worker. He's improved as a run blocker significantly since his first year. I think he's the kind of guy you want to build around. So I have no problems with this deal. And Josh is saying it is going to launch, the videos at noon. So maybe we'll figure out a viewing party for that. But noon Pacific time, by the way. But I think it's a smart deal for the Seahawks. I think the timing of it's interesting because the Seahawks right now, let me pull up over the cap. The Seahawks have cap space this year. In fact, well, that's 2026. I want the 2025 cap space. 2025. All right. So the Seahawks still have $16 million in cap space this season. Now that can roll over, but it's also possible that what they could do is they could now move some of that signing bonus, prorate it if they want, potentially into this year, take some of the cap hit this year, and also like lower cap hits in future years. I think it's also worth noting that there's a cash implication to that deal, most likely for this year as well. Now, one of the things that's interesting about that is even though it's a new calendar year, even though it's the same league year, it is a new calendar year. So I'm not sure exactly how the teams do their budgeting. If it's an annual budget as opposed to a season-based budget, then the Seahawks just got access to their new budget for 2026 from a cash perspective. And that might be part of the reason for the timing of this, that they can spend some money that they maybe didn't have to spend in last year's budget. But now you've got your left tackle and your right tackle locked up for years. And both of them came from that same 2022 draft. Foundational to have your bookend tackles. Both of them have played well this year. Both of them, in case you're curious, finish, I think, among the top 25 tackles in the NFL. Pull it up by PFF. So let's go with offensive grade. Let's make sure they've played enough snaps. Abe Lucas finishes 21st. Charles Cross finishes 26th in total PFF grade. And as far as pass blocking grade, Charles Cross was 16th. So not bad. Not bad. Trying to see. Abe Lucas was 35th in pass blocking, but much higher in run blocking. So anyway. Good stuff for Charles Cross. Good stuff for the Seahawks. That is where we are with that particular deal. Now, let's talk about what happened yesterday in the playoffs. All the kind of NFC teams didn't look good going into the playoffs. I'll say that. The Eagles rested everybody. So, you know, they didn't play Jalen Hurts and a lot of their guys. They lost to the Commanders. They could have gotten to the number two seed had they won that game, but they didn't. The Bears did not look great in their final game against the Lions. And they played Caleb Williams, and he was not great in that game. You had the Packers resting everybody. They didn't look good. You had the Panthers back into a playoff spot. They lost their final two games of the season. If they had won either one of those games, they would have clinched a playoff spot themselves. Instead, they needed the Falcons to beat the Saints, which is what happened. And now the Panthers are your fourth seed. And the Rams, they played their starters against the Cardinals in LA, home game. And the Cardinals were ahead in that game in like the fourth quarter. Like it wasn't good for the Rams for a lot of that game. Now they ended up winning 37-20. So they did put up some points and get going and maybe got their mojo back a little bit, but not an encouraging game if you're a Rams fan. So here is what the seeding looks like for the playoffs. The Seahawks have a bye. The Bears are the number two seed. They will face the Packers in Chicago. Packers are the seventh seed. The Eagles are the three seed. They will host the 49ers. The Panthers are the four seed. They will host the Rams. Now, we'll talk about these matchups and, you know, which teams maybe are better for the Seahawks or not. But worth understanding, if you don't already, the way that this works, it's not a bracket. It's not like you just go from this seed will play the number one seed next. It is the lowest seed that wins next weekend, this coming weekend, that will travel to Seattle to face the Seahawks. So, for example, the Packers, as of right now, well, let me check the latest odds on this. Do they have it ready on? Yes. Okay. The Packers are 1.5 point underdogs as of right now to the Bears. There were places where it was pick 'em or that they were even favored in a couple of places. But for right now, the Packers are 1.5 point underdogs. They beat the Bears the first time. They were ahead of the Bears not that long ago. And the Bears had a miracle comeback to win it. So if the Packers beat the Bears, they're coming to Seattle. No other game matters because they are the lowest seed in the NFC. So if they win, they'd be the Seahawks' first opponent. 49ers, obviously, the sixth seed. They'd be the next lowest seed. So let's say the Packers lost, the Bears win. If the 49ers beat the Eagles, they'd come right to Seattle and you'd face the 49ers back-to-back games for at least the Seahawks, if not for the 49ers. Now we get to the other possibility, and it's a very realistic one. We've been talking about this for probably 3 or 4 weeks on this show, which is, let's say the Bears take care of business at home. The Eagles take care of business at home. The Rams are almost certainly going to beat the Panthers. As of right now, the Rams are 10.5 point favorites against Carolina. That is a massive playoff point spread on the road. There is no other point spread that is larger than 3.5 right now. So Rams are almost certainly going to win that game. Yes, they lost to them before. Yes, there's some hope because I think the Panthers should get Robert Hunt back, the really good guard, and that can help the run game. Like, there's some reasons to feel a little bit hopeful, but the Rams are almost certainly going to win that game. And so if that's the case and the Eagles and Bears win their games at home, then the first game the Seahawks will play in the playoffs will be hosting the Rams. Now, I know a lot of folks are like, oh, man, come on. Like, I don't want to face the Rams in the first game. I get it. I'll say this. I've got a few thoughts on it. But first thing I'll say is you're almost absolutely going to have to beat the Rams to get to the Super Bowl. I think the Rams are the only other team that, to me, is on the Seahawks level in terms of total team quality. And if you play them first and you beat them first, then the NFC Championship, honestly, It's going to feel like after you've been wearing a weighted vest and you remove it, like, it's going to feel a lot easier. I don't think there's any team that you could face in that conference championship that would be as challenging as the Rams. So, and I'll say this, we'll go back and we'll look at some of the other times the Seahawks have had this number one seed and bye. But in fact, I can do that right now. Like, it's easy enough to do that. The first game you play, almost no matter who they are is the harder one. We've talked about before the 2005 Seahawks. The Seahawks hadn't won a playoff game in like 20 something years. People forget there how long of a drought there was before the 2005 team was dominant. But that first game was a home game against what was the Washington Redskins. And that Washington Redskins team was 11-6. They were 11-6. That doesn't make sense. Is that right? And they had Mark Brunell, Clinton Portis, who was not that good. You know, the receivers were like Santana Moss. Like, it was not a great football team. And it took everything the Seahawks had to win. Sean Alexander left that game with a concussion early on. He was the MVP. That was a run-oriented team. It took Matt Hasselbeck, you know, sliding into the end zone on a run in the third quarter to finally go up 14-3. It was tough. The next game, they just absolutely wiped the floor with the field with the Carolina Panthers, 34-14. So, again, first game was the tough one. The next time that they had the number one overall seed, obviously, was 2013. And everybody remembers the game against the 49ers for the NFC Championship. A lot of people forget the game that started in the divisional round against the Saints. That was a very good Saints team that had won 12 games that year. And I'm confused by what I'm seeing there because I don't think they had. Anyway, doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter. I'm getting distracted by things that don't matter. Anyway, that game, they won 23-15 over the Saints. It was field goal, field goal. It was 6-0 after one quarter. It ended up being 16-0 at halftime. But then 16-8, the Saints in the fourth quarter brought it to within essentially one score before the Seahawks, scored again, made it 23-8. But it was nip and tuck. It was not an easy game. It was not a dominant game. The way that Seahawks team had played, I believe they played that Saints team before and beat them 34-7. This wasn't that. It was a much tougher game. And then the other time that the Seahawks had the number one overall seed was 2014. And in that year, the first game they hosted was against the Carolina Panthers. Now, the Panthers were not good that year. They were like, I think, 500. And the Seahawks... only led 14-10 at halftime. It was back and forth, but it was tight in that first game, and they did end up pulling away a little bit. Cam Chancellor had the big interception return at night, so it was 24-10. The Panthers were driving, and Cam Chancellor had a 90-yard pick six that ended that game. But again, that was a pretty tough first game. So I think whoever you play, the first game's tough, winning your first playoff game. And this is the first playoff game for Mike McDonald. It's the first playoff game for a lot of these players. And just getting that, it's a different experience. And so if you have to play the Rams first, not ideal. But if you beat them, I mean... I think that's essentially your Super Bowl. I think you win every other game. So it's I get it. But that's the situation. And as we look back at those matchups, let's look at those again. One, I think there's a very realistic chance that the Packers beat the Bears. The Bears almost beat the 49ers. And we just saw what the 49ers look like against the Seahawks. The Packers, they're a sneaky good team, especially when Jordan Love's playing. I think they're going to be getting healthier. And And so I think the Packers can absolutely win that game. The 49ers Eagles is an interesting one. What is the current spread on that game? Eagles 49ers, Eagles are 3.5 point favorites. And the reason that makes sense to me is that the Eagles defense is really good. I don't think it's as I'm almost positive it's not as good as the Seahawks defense. I think the 49ers offense will perform better in that game than they did against the Seahawks. We'll see if they get Trent Williams back for that game. Ricky Pearsall back. Those are key things. What is the weather forecast for that game? Is that game is Sunday. Okay. Philly weather. So that's a Sunday game. It'll be in the mid 40s, no rain really, or snow. So, okay. I don't think it's crazy that the 49ers could win that game. I really don't. I'm not super impressed by the Eagles. And I mean, I think the Eagles should be able to push them around offensively, and that should be enough. But it wouldn't shock me if the 49ers win that game. Either way, like if all the home teams win, by the way, which I didn't really go over, if all the home teams win, the Bears, the Eagles, the Panthers, then the Panthers would be coming to Seattle, which would be great. I think everybody would be fine with that. It would also mean that the Rams were eliminated and the 49ers were eliminated and the Packers were eliminated. So that would also be good. But I don't think that's very realistic. So the other thing I want to mention is in terms of when this will happen, when the game will be. Well, the fact of the matter is two of the three NFC games will be played on Saturday. The Rams are at 1:30 against the Panthers. The Packers against the Bears is at 5:00. Why does it matter that it's Saturday? Because if either the Packers win or the Rams, the ones that if one of those teams are the ones that comes to Seattle, then very likely what will happen is the Seahawks game will be on Saturday, a week from this Saturday, because they'll probably go Saturday to Saturday with those teams, as opposed to taking an extra day of rest away, or taking a day of rest away from a team that played Sunday. So if the 49ers and Eagles, if the winner of that game is the one coming to Seattle, then I think the Seahawks game would likely be a week from Sunday. I'm just kind of guessing here. And I think, you know, I don't think it's that big of a deal for the Seahawks either way. I wouldn't hate them getting an extra day rest and an extra day of preparation. I also don't think, you know, having played a Saturday game this weekend, they're already getting an extra day built in because of that. So we'll see. I also don't want to forget to mention, for people that have been asking, HBTix, HBTIX.com has been updated. You can now go into HBTix and list your playoff tickets. So I'll show you how, in case you guys don't know. But why is this doing this to me? All right. Well, I'll figure this out in a second. It's wanting a login that I don't have easily in front of me. Anyway, the point is that you can list your tickets to the divisional round. You can list your tickets to the NFC Championship game. I will just warn and recommend people. There are always scammers out there. This system does not protect you completely from scammers. So make sure that when you go to HBTix, that you go to the Read This tab, follow the best practices there to protect yourself as a seller and as a purchaser. So here, I will show you guys how this works just for people that are new to it. So this is HBTix, and you see there's no available tickets because right now the season's over. But if you go and you click add, you can see event name, And right now there's two new event names available: divisional round playoff and NFC championship. And you can start listing those. Let's start taking advantage of this, folks. Again, I don't charge any fees for this. The goal is to make sure that every single seat in Lumen Field is filled by a Seahawks fan and not an opposing fan. If you sell your seats on StubHub or other places, then anybody can buy them. You don't have control. If you use hbtix.com, it gives you the tools to at least verify that who you're selling them to is a Seahawks fan. And you can still sell the ticket through like NFL Ticket Exchange or whatever it is that you like to do. But use this as a way to find a Seahawks fan. Like, take the extra step. Costs you nothing. And if you love this team and you really want them to win a Super Bowl, this is a concrete way that you can help by making sure that your tickets go to a Seahawks fan. HBTix.com, make sure you take advantage. All right. So that was kind of a whirlwind through where things stand with the playoff seating, with the Charles Cross signing, with some fun DVOA facts. And I've already forgot all the other things I said I was going to cover. We'll come back to those. Oh, the 2026 opponents. Let's talk about that very briefly, because it's now set. Now, whether or not it's the biggest news in the world, no, not really. Not really. But it is worth just kind of knowing. So I know everybody likes to kind of figure out their travel plans a year in advance. And where is the one I had? Here we go. All right. So here is the Seahawks schedule. Where'd it go? That's not it. So the Seahawks 2026 opponents obviously are going to be their NFC West divisional opponents, as they always are. And then they get an extra home game in 2026. So that's cool. But they will play the Cowboys, the Giants, the Chargers, the Chiefs, the Bears, and the Patriots at home. So they get the NFC East and the AFC East. And we'll kind of see how the NFC East trends. It was definitely a way down year. The Giants, I think, are an ascending team. Jackson Dart, Cam Scadaboo, you know, Abdul Carter. They've got some interesting talent on that crew. The Chargers, you'd get Harbaugh versus his former DC at Michigan, Mike McDonald. So some interesting stuff there. Derwin James against Nick Emenwori, who is Nick Emenwori's kind of favorite player. The Chiefs, obviously, Patrick Mahomes. We'll see. That team has been down. Are they going to be better? They're not in the playoffs even this year. The Bears obviously are ascending. I think that'll be a fun one. We'll see how the playoffs go. That might be a team you face in the playoffs. And the Patriots, who are obviously very hot this year, had a very easy schedule. Not going to be as easy when you're facing the NFC West next year, guys. We'll see. On the road, obviously, you got the NFC West teams, and then you've got the Commanders. So they go back to Washington again. I won't mind. I love going back to DC. They got a game in Philly, a game in Denver. Old times, man. AFC West. It brings back memories. Too bad that we will miss. We will miss Pete Carroll, who I'm sure is going to be let go. And maybe not even Geno Smith, depending on what happens. Tyler Lockett, maybe the Seahawks will have Max Crosby in a revenge game going to Vegas. That would be interesting. And then Carolina, they go back to Carolina again. So on the road, five of the road games for the Seahawks next year are teams they played on the road this year. The new ones are Philly, Denver, and Las Vegas. I'm guessing a lot of Seahawks fans are going to be at that Vegas game. No doubt about it. And we also don't know. There's going to be an international game. I'm almost positive. And we'll see. Ah, yes, we're getting news now that as it is Black Monday, coaches are getting canned. And I believe Pete Carroll just got let go. Let's double check. Kevin Stefanski already. Yes, Pete Carroll has been fired as head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders after just 1 year. You can be almost certain that this is Pete's last head coaching job in the NFL, maybe a head coaching job anywhere. And I don't take any pleasure in it, like zero pleasure in it. I know some of my co-hosts do, and that's fine. Everyone feels however they're going to feel. I'll always love and respect Pete for what he did for this franchise. I don't think Pete did anything wrong from a human perspective. I think he made some errors as a coach and football leader. And I think it was definitely time for him to move on. But I didn't want his career to end this way. This is a guy that I think really was a leader in positive leadership and how to, you know, always see the best in people. And I love that he was able to get to the mountaintop, both in college football and the NFL, with that style. And I love the swagger that he welcomed and fostered in the Seahawks franchise. I thought that was all great. So I've got nothing bad to say about Pete. I think it's a bummer that his career is going to end this way. But you know, there's no chance they were going to be able to keep him after the team got worse in almost all ways. Almost all the moves that he likely advocated for, including the Geno move, were disasters. The Ashton Jeanty pick at the beginning of the first round, I really thought Armon Membu was the better pick. That's not a revisionist thing. That's what I said at the time. And Membu, I think, is maybe the rookie of the year. And Jeanty is fine. Like, he's an okay running back, but he's not like Bijan Robinson level. Like, he's not that kind of running back. So, sucks for Pete. He's not the only coach that's been let go. Kevin Stefanski was also fired. The interesting thing with Stefanski, really good, smart play caller. He's been coach of the year multiple times. If for some reason, I don't think it's likely, but if for some reason Clint Kubiak were to get hired somewhere else, Stefanski would be an ideal OC. Now, he's, I'm sure, looking for a next head coaching job, but the reason I talk about that is when I went back and I studied Super Bowl winners over the last 20 some years, the amount of those teams that had two head coaches, not that they're currently head coaches, but two guys that had been head coaches in the NFL on the staff was staggering. It was almost every single team had a former head coach on staff as a coordinator. Like, for example, Andy Reid with the Chiefs, you have Steve Spagnuolo as the DC. He was a former head coach. The Eagles, you've got Nick Sirianni as a head coach, Vic Fangio, former head coach. And you kind of go on down the list. There's a real benefit to having somebody who's sat in the head coaching seat as a coordinator because they know what you're going through. They know they can handle more than most because they've had to handle more than most. And also, you know, the fact is, it's a little bit of confirmation bias. If you're a coordinator that becomes a head coach, you've clearly been a really impressive coordinator. So for you to be good enough to get a head coaching job and then to go back to being a coordinator can mean that you're a cheat code a bit, right? If all you have to focus on is one side of the ball, that can be special. So I think at this point, it's pretty likely Clint Kubiak sticks around with Seattle. I think that's a good thing. I've said from the point that he was hired that you're not looking for him to be the next Kyle Shanahan or Sean McVay, which would be cool. But if he was that good, he's going to get hired right away and you're not going to see him. I think what you want him to be is Daryl Bevel, which is good, plenty good enough to win a Super Bowl, almost two Super Bowls, but not a guy that's going to get a lot of head coaching offers. And I think Clint Kubiak's got a chance to be that. And as I've said before, I also think Clint Kubiak would like to stick around. I think he'd like to keep his family in one place and get some stability for his kids. And I think he'd also like to have a chance to come back to the same team and the same players and the same staff 2 years in a row, which he hasn't had to do as a chance to do as an OC yet. His head coach got fired in Minnesota. His head coach got fired in New Orleans. And so he was a one and done in those places as well. So I think that's another factor there. It was also really interesting that the Falcons, who won their last four games of the season and tied for the division lead, they ended up losing the division because they lost both games to the Panthers. But they fired Raheem Morris and they fired their GM. And they just named Greg Beatles the president and CEO of the Falcons to run things. I mean, Raheem Morris was hired in the same time period as Mike McDonald. And I actually had this in my Mike McDonald story. I'm going to try to pull up the graphic. Is this the right one? No. Oh, I think this is in my John Schneider article, maybe. Let me pull this up. Because the guys that were hired in his hiring year, there's a lot of them that have already been fired. So let's look at the coach. Do I have this here? There we go. Yeah. Okay. We're going to share this. Put this up on screen for you guys. I'll make this bigger. All right. So this is the head coaching class for 2024. Now, this was written a while ago. And so the actual records are no longer accurate. Neither are which ones are active. But you've got Mike McDonald and Jim Harbaugh at the top. Dan Quinn, who had a great year last year, not so great this year, but he's coming back. And Dave Canales, who is with the Panthers, and they backed into the playoffs. Of the eight coaches that were hired in 2024, half of them have already been fired now that Raheem Morris is also fired. Brian Callahan for the Titans was fired. Gerard Mayo for the Patriots was fired. Antonio Pierce for the Raiders was fired. Wild that Antonio Pierce had a better record than Pete Carroll. And if you look at, let's do this real quick because I'm curious. So the Seahawks, Mike McDonald's record is 24-10. It's fun to say. 24-10. Let's look at the Chargers. Chargers are 22-12. So Mike McDonald cleared his old mentor by two wins in his first season. And honestly, I think had a harder task. He didn't have a franchise quarterback and Justin Herbert sitting there. He didn't have one of the best left tackles in Joe Alt and Rashawn Slater, who's another great tackle. And like what's been a very good offensive line. And then Derwin James already, like they had a lot of stuff already in place. And Mike McDonald's turned it pretty quickly to be that good. And as you said already, most wins in the history of the franchise in your second season, most road wins in the history of franchise, largest point differential in the history of the franchise. So yeah, like Seahawks won that hiring, no question about it. All right, there are so many super chats. Let me get to some of these super chats since we weren't able to get to all of them. You guys are so generous. It was really amazing in the post-game show. Wish I could get StreamYard to make it so that their browser version of this is so crappy on your phone. It's like the size of a stamp. Anyway, So we have got Tu Firma has joined as a member. Welcome to the crew. We also have Brady, who has joined as welcome to the crew. Great to have you. Folks who join, consider joining as a club level or higher member on YouTube. That gets you access to the Discord server. Lots of fun stuff going on over there. P. Scott, euphoric moment watching Mike Mack's defense sniff out all the those sneaky Shanahan plays that plagued us for the last 8 years. Eamon Worry, sniffing out the Kittle screen was pure bliss. Love the show. Yeah, I mean, it's true. I mean, one of the things we didn't really talk about much was just how desperate Shanahan seemed in that game to find anything to work. When they did that like reverse flea flicker and Purdy had to check it down and he still only got like 4 yards, there was nothing there. There was nothing there. And think about how many times you've seen Shanahan and Purdy and that offense just roll teams. And they looked as bad or worse as than the Carolina Panthers did, like against the same Seahawks defense. So it was a pleasure to see for sure. It's Zeke YT says it never felt so good. I've never felt so good about leaving 13 points on the board. The defense, my God, Mike has so much confidence in those guys. Yeah, it was. I am going to ask about the 1 yard play. I didn't want to. It was not. I had questions about some things in that game, that night, that post game. That was not the time to ask them. You know what? Like, let's just revel in that win. But yeah, I have some questions. Big Slick says, awesome work all year, brother. What are your thoughts on the dark side identity? I'm on the fence. The old lady dropped the dominion of dominance during the 49ers game last night. And I kind of like it. DOD. Well, I can tell you they're not going to take any other names. They've got plenty. They've got the dark side. They've got death zone. They've got MOB. So they're not going to get any more. Leonard Williams said that they call themselves the dark side and they want that out there. So I'm rolling with the dark side. I'm fine with it. I've got some graphics that I'm starting to work on. I'm going to try to dial in the visual style of, but I think the dark side makes some sense. I like MOB just partially because I think it's kind of amazing if the Seahawks go from the LOB to the MOB. There's something just kind of fitting, poetic about that. But in any event, I just like that they're good. I don't care what you call them. Like, just call them good. They're really, really good. All right. 12 for life. Go Hawks, who's been a member for 11 months, says that win was cathartic AF. Happy bye week 12s. Go Hawks. Brady says, love how 49ers fans switching up from running their mouths to making every excuse. That's what happens when you don't have a mob mentality. Yeah, I mean, the funny thing there is, I mean, 49ers fans are so predictable. Like, they were in every show. I had to like turn on, you know, like subscriber only kind of stuff to keep them from just trolling. And they were in every show we do. And it's like, you guys suck. And then as soon as they lose, they disappear. And I want to share, like, I want to share these pictures because I have so many of them. But I posted this on Twitter the night after the game that because I took so many pictures. Last year, I was shocked. It was the first time I'd attended a game in San Francisco at Levi Stadium. I was shocked last year how many of the seats were empty. And so I posted that last year. That was a game that the 49ers had Christian McCaffrey. He had just come back. He played against Tampa Bay the week before. He played really well. They had, you know, all their guys pretty much. They had Fred Warner, all this stuff. And they were going for the playoffs at that point. And there were so many empty seats. And I posted pictures and 49ers fans were like, oh, you took it at this specific point when things were, I'm like, okay, this year, there's no way it's going to be empty. It's for the number one overall seed. It's the last game of the season. It's in prime time. Certainly, like even the least faithful franchise of fan base would fill their stadium for that. Well, I was shocked they didn't. Let me show you some of this. Now, this video I took, first of all, start out with Home of the Faithful, which felt appropriate. I wanted to make sure you got that. But then as you look through this, this was at the beginning of the game. So I'm going to pause there. You see all of these red seats? Like there are red seats. Those aren't jerseys. Those are red seats all over the place. It gets worse. Like I zoom in, look at all, like that's not just a few empty seats. That is now pretty full there. But then look at the other side. Like, look how many empty seats there are. This is for the number one overall seed. What are you doing, 49ers fans? This is fourth quarter. Now, at this point, game's pretty much over. This is the 100 and 200 level gone. This is first quarter, same section. Look how many empty seats in the 100 level and 200 level. The game's 7-0. This is 2:26 to go. This is not like timeout and everybody is like at halftime and left their seats. These are freaking empty seats during the middle of this game. Look at that. Now, that's not what, like, we're not going to spend all the time focusing on that, but that is who 49ers fans are. They call themselves the faithful. They don't even show up for their team in the biggest game. They talk all sorts of shit when their team is on, like, playing really well. And then as soon as they lose, they disappear. Not only that, but they're just trashy people for the most part. And yes, I've told you before, I have a lot of 49ers friends that are 49ers fans. I just don't like that part of them. But just more evidence of who they really are coming through. Speaking of evidence of who they really are, if you didn't know, I did make my donation to the San Francisco Marin Food Bank. I almost made it in honor of David Lombardi, but I decided to take the high road and make it in honor of the 2025 NFC West Division Champion Seahawks with a parenthetical bang bang. I also made the donation of $500 to the HopeLink, which we've done before, which is up in Seattle. So I split it, Seattle and San Francisco. If you want to make a donation to a food bank in San Francisco for thanking them for being such a shitty football team and helping us win the number one seed, if you want to do it for Seattle, great. If you want to do it for Carolina, who beat the Rams, huge, huge helping hand that they did for the Seahawks, great. Any of those, I think now is a good time to do good for other people. It's always a good time to do that. And never hurts to build up some karma. So think about doing that. All right, there are some more super chats here. Run Up the Tree says, let me get this out of my way because there's something distracting me. All right, random question, curious on your thoughts. Where do you think the Hawks-Niners rivalry ranks with other big rivalries in the NFL? Is it as big as the Packers, Bears, Eagles, Cowboys, Ravens, Steelers? Not right now. It isn't. I think when the Seahawks and 49ers were going at it in the Harbaugh Carroll era, I thought it was the best rivalry, the most heated rivalry, the best quality of teams in the NFL. I don't think it was that close. Like, it was vicious. This isn't that yet. Now, we'll see. The Seahawks have now beat the 49ers in San Francisco. I think a lot of San Francisco folks have still never took the Seahawks that seriously. The Geno Smith years when they were beating them all the time. Brock Purdy had, quote, a 6-1 record against the Seahawks, which, whatever. I also talked to some of the guys in the locker room before this, before the game. And I still think the Rams are more, like, there's a little more heat there. I think Byron Murphy even said on his appearance with Stacy and Bump last week that he hates the Rams more than the 49ers. So I don't think this one's built up as much. There's also not the history. When you're talking about Packers, Bears, like, this is generational. Eagles, Cowboys, generational. Ravens, Steelers, not quite generational, but it is the former Browns franchise. So there's a long history there, but there's a chance for it to build. And you know what? We'll what happens in the playoffs is a lot of what shapes some of these rivalries. All right. Anton says, you think that Seattle will extend more before the game? I don't know. Crossed my mind. You know, they now are in, now they're not in, technically they can start to extend their 2023 draft class now, because there's a point in the league year where you can now start to do that. And I think they've crossed that threshold. So they could extend JSN and Devin Witherspoon and that crew from that year. Derek Hall, I think, is in that range. I don't, you know, Zach Charbonnet. I don't know. I honestly don't know. It's very rare to do extensions this time of year, but they have some money sloshing around, and so they might. I can see them doing it with Devin Witherspoon. Like, that guy is in those concentric circles of the roster. I think he is the innermost circle. Like, from the way the coaching staff and the front office looks at him, I think he is the centerpiece of that team. Now, does that mean he's the best player on the team? Not necessarily, but he is like the nuclear core that just fuels that thing. And like, there's no doubt they're going to sign him. Whether they do it now, I don't know, but it wouldn't shock me if he was a priority. I also am really curious. Now, this is an off-season conversation, but what they're going to do with Reek Woolen, because I'm telling you, that guy has been so good for this entire season, other than a couple plays in the first game against the 49ers. And one of the things I love about Reek Woolen is that I think a lot of people would have expected his personality type to respond to Mike McDonald's style and respond to getting essentially benched in favor of Josh Jobe by just kind of slouching and retreating and maybe being a bit of a curmudgeon on the team. He's been the opposite. Like, he's part of what creates the culture and the fun and the silliness in that locker room. I've seen it. I know it. He has worked his ass off. He's gotten better. He's taken the coaching and he's earned back that starting spot. He's played better than Josh Jobe. I think very clearly better than Josh Jobe. And I don't think Josh Jobe's played poorly, but he's been better. And now you've got a situation where those guys are going to be free agents. And I think Reek Woolen is worth the extra money. I think he will be the most talented player the Seahawks will have ever let leave in free agency if they let him walk. Like, name another player that is as talented as Reek Woolen who the Seahawks did not even try to sign back. I think that was Brady Henderson at the beginning of the season said there was pretty much no chance that the Seahawks were going to bring him back. I think that's real. I think that was, you know, Brady's pretty plugged into these things. I think it would be, I've said all along, I think it would be a move that they would regret if they let Reek Woolen go. I continue to believe that. And I would be pretty happy if they brought him back. I know not everybody would, but I would be. And I loved his tackle for loss in this game. I thought, I just love this season for Reek Woolen. I really do. I think he's a guy I easily root for and can do special things. And when you add confidence and the coaching to his repertoire, that's already like alien-esque athletic ability, this guy can be the best corner in the entire NFL. Like, he's that good. So yeah, I am curious what happens there. I mean, if you sign Reek Woolen, And obviously you're already going to do that with Devin Witherspoon, and you've got Nicky Minwori, and you have those three for years to come. Yes, please. Like, sign me up. Even if the guys after them are not Josh Jobe level, if you've got to find some other guys to bring up, I mean, maybe Nehemiah Pritchett will develop. Maybe, you know, they feel good about some of the other guys they can find. But yeah, I would like them to keep requalling. All right. A couple more super chats here. Adam Gregg, a bet on Hawks to win the division over the summer because the odds were so disrespectful and I was fired up about the season from watching this show. Won $3,000. So excited for the playoffs. Go Hawks. Well, Adam, I appreciate you taking $20 of your $3,000 that was earned in part from watching this show. That feels like a fair tip for your inside scoop here on Hawk Blogger Mornings. And I'm happy for you, dude. Detail-oriented, Bobby says, Brian, this came out, Pete Carroll got fired. Yes, thank you, Bobby. I appreciate you for sharing. Trap Cat, great last season win. Clock management, great. Defense, great. Run game, great. Sam protected the ball. Only issue is red zone completion. Still trust Jason Myers. Well, let's hope Jason Myers just had a little like flushable game, because I think he's been the best kicker in the NFC up until that game. He's been really, really consistent. And my God, they're going to need him in the playoffs. Like, so no more doinking from 5 yards away. The first miss, like, it's going to happen. You're going to miss from 45, 47 yards, whatever it was. Like, it's going to happen sometimes. But that doink, that was bad. Also, the kicking out of bounds, bad. Like, let's not do that anymore. All right. JZ says, hey, Brian, did you see Luke Wilson saying the Rams are still better than the Seahawks? He said it on TSN after we beat the Niners. Thoughts? You know what, Luke? I talked about having Luke on the show before. Maybe we'll get Luke on. Luke's entitled to his opinion. I don't like a former Seahawk repping another team in the division. That's bad form in my mind. Even if you believe that to be true, I think it's bad form to be hyping up a team that is a rival in the division. I also think it's not a crazy take. It's just not. I think the Seahawks are going to win the Super Bowl. That's what I think. Now, am I sure of it? No. Are there a million things that could happen that change that? Absolutely. But I think the Seahawks have earned that expectation, and it's not just me anymore. The odds makers have them as the most likely. Although the Rams, I think I saw somewhere else, they were just below the Seahawks in odds, even though they have to win an extra game. So the implication there is odds makers still do see the Rams as the better team. They just have a harder path to get there. So I don't need people to say the Seahawks are the best team right now. The Seahawks are number one team in point differential, number one team in wins, number one seed in the NFC, number one in DVOA, number one DVOA defense, number one pass defense, number one rush defense. Like, I don't need more validation. And for you guys that have been with me this whole season, we've been talking, like, there's people out there like talking about, oh, Mike McDonald's got this cheat code on defense because he doesn't have to go out. He can have a light box and they can still defend the run. And they play nickel all the time. They never go to base. Like, that's some new insight. We've been talking about that since like week one here. Like, that's not new news for all of you that have been tuning in here. And you're going to see a lot more of that. People trying to figure out the Seahawks team that they have generally dismissed, even when they were winning, because they weren't the Rams and they weren't the 49ers and they weren't offensive led and they did have Sam Darnold and all these other things. Let them. They're going to find out. They're going to find out, because here's a number for you. This is shocking even to me. So the Seahawks wind up leading the NFL in scoring defense, which I love, because the Colts scored 30 points against the Texans yesterday. they needed to score 28 points in order to give the Seahawks the number one scoring defense. So that happened. I was really excited about that. And it's the first time the Seahawks have led the NFL in scoring defense since 2015. There's going to be a lot of these, not since 2015 or 2014 or 13 for the Seahawks defense. Anyway, so number one scoring defense, that's cool. But then I looked over the last, since week 13, so the last six games, and they've allowed just like 15 points per game over that span, which is pretty much like that's what roughly what the Seahawks allowed in 2013. Like when they were that LOB team. But when you look at those six games and that 15 points per game, one of those games was the 37 points that they gave up to the Rams. Well, if you take that game out, you just look at the other five games, the Seahawks are allowing 7.6 points per game in those other games. That's crazy. 7.6 points per game in five of the last six games. So that's wild. That is wild to me. Sorry, I was trying to find, because I think I had a visual of that somewhere. Can I just share? This is just for my own benefit. I had this graphic in mind all last week. I was so hoping to be able to make this graphic. And then the Seahawks and Brock Purdy obliged. You've got Brock Purdy in week 15, 16, and 17. Just absolutely destroying the league and doing that stupid Dougie dance, being so obnoxious. And then I got to put the dancing stopped for Brock Purdy against the Seahawks. And this picture of him at the end of the game, just contemplating life after getting destroyed by Derek Hall and Leonard Williams. How sweet to take that little dancing guy and knock him into next week, literally. This was so fun. I really did enjoy making that graphic. So yeah, 7.6 points per game in games that weren't the Rams game. Now you might say, well, that you can't just discount the Rams game. It happened. Of course. And I guarantee the Rams are like, oh, we've got them. Here's the thing. Two things about that Rams game. First is the Rams came out and ran the ball really effectively in the first half. But then what happened? They couldn't run it in the second half. So Mike McDonald's figured out the Rams run game, I think, relatively well. Next, the Seahawks had a lot of explosive given up in that game. And I've got confirmation from a number of guys on that team. There's a lot of miscommunications. Blown coverages because of miscommunications. Guys weren't in the right place, including the touchdown Puka got at the end in overtime. So that's likely related to the crowd noise stuff. And communication at home is going to be something that they're going to really have to work on and focus on. But that's not the Rams being better. That's the Seahawks making mistakes. And I don't think it's an accident that the Seahawks went on the road to Carolina and to San Francisco or Santa Clara and just absolutely destroyed those teams defensively. In fact, this is a look at the Seahawks pass defense in the last 8 weeks. And this is six of those eight games. In six of those eight games, the Seahawks have allowed less than 160 passing yards. That's crazy. They've allowed 160 passing yards combined in the last two games. Versus Indianapolis is 118. Atlanta had 154. Vikings, 96. The Rams in week 11, 130. Yeah, so they've done it. Like, that is wild to do that to any teams, let alone six teams in eight games. Now, the Titans had 254, I believe, with, you know, Cam Ward. A lot of that came at the end of that game. A lot of it was crazy scrambling and stuff. And then there was the big game that the Rams had. But my point is, evidence for me is that the Seahawks defense is playing lights out, and that the Rams will not have another game like that against the Seahawks next time they play. I don't believe it. I think the Seahawks defense is going to do to them what they did the first time, and hopefully also, you know, limit their touchdowns the way they were able to do in the second game. Now, the Rams are likely to have Davante Adams back by that point. We'll see if they get Kevin Dotson back. I think that's a question mark. Their guard that was injured in this game against the Seahawks, he has been iffy and has not been back so far. They also, Terrence Ferguson, their tight end, the rookie tight end, who's a big part of their offense, he went down with a hamstring injury. They did get Tyler Higbee back, their other tight end. He had a big game yesterday. But look, I believe the Seahawks defense has what it takes to stop any offense. And I think the question is, can they figure out their home, communication in order to play that level in these next two games and get them into the Super Bowl where communication won't be a problem? All right, more super chats coming in here. Seth Kialoa says they love talking crap about Sam, but Purdy is going to have nightmares for years to come about this defense constantly swarming on and made him look bad. I talked about that in the first look and tail of the tape, all that stuff this last week. I thought the most important thing for the Seahawks was to keep Brock Purdy in the pocket. It was more important to keep him in the pocket than it was to sack him. They managed to do both. And almost all of the plays that the 49ers did get were pretty like creative elusiveness kind of stuff. So yeah, that was really, really good. And Derek Hall, a week off, he came back with a vengeance. Now they're going to get another couple weeks off. That whole pass rush is going to have as fresh a legs, fresh of bodies as they've had in a while. And if you're worried about, sorry, I was checking if there's new news. Sorry, let me refresh my memory. What I was saying. I don't know what I was saying. I'm sorry, guys. I got distracted by my own chat. Doesn't matter. It was something about them having, worried about the bye week. If you're worried about the bye week and will they lose their edge? Last 2 years, the Seahawks have had a bye. Last year, after that, the bye week, they came out and they beat the 49ers in San Francisco for the first win against the 49ers in years. This year, after the bye, they went into Washington and absolutely clowned the Commanders. You give this team a bye, you give them fresh legs, you give Mike McDonald and that coaching staff extra time to self-scout and to game plan. It's a pretty tough team. It's a pretty tough team. I will definitely take the extra rest over worrying about losing any edge. Michael Riggs, Sam Darnold discussed on First Take got wild. I didn't hear it. I don't listen to First Take, so let me know what they said. Happy to respond to it. Seth Kialoa says, so happy we didn't have to see Purdy's dumb dancing. I am too. I am too. He had nothing to dance about. And my guess is his dancing would not come easy. I think he is sore today and definitely was sore yesterday. There's so much more. I mean, we've got a little time. I'm not in a rush. Let me tell you this. I have not gotten a chance to open it yet. I'm going to have an unboxing. What I'll probably do is I'll probably come on. We'll do like a live watch of the Cable Thanos video when it releases. That'll be fun. And then If you go to simplyseattle.com, I'm going to share this right now. So simplyseattle.com, they've got NFC West champ gear. So if you want Seahawks championship gear at simplyseattle.com, you can get it. 12 greater than 49 is always a great one. Some of these nice ones with the state of Washington, best in the West. Anyway, if you use code HawkBlogger15, you'll get 15% off. So make sure if you go to simplyseattle.com, use code HawkBlogger15 and get the best deal on the best Seahawks gear you're going to find. As well as if you go to Sleeper, download the Sleeper app, make sure that you use code Hawks, gets you up to $100 match on your first deposit. Terms and conditions apply. See Sleeper's terms of use for details. Currently operational over 25 states. Check out Sleeper today. All right. More stuff. So updated numbers for Brock Purdy when he faces Mike McDonald. This was the thing that all the 49ers fans hated when I would say this, before the game, that he had thrown 7 interceptions in, what was it, 4 games against Mike McDonald. Well, he has now thrown 8 interceptions in 5 games. His record's 2-3, and he has a 77.2 passer rating in those games. So Mike McDonald's got him on lock. He's not the only one he's got on lock. The last 3 times Kyle Shanahan has faced Mike McDonald, he scored 3 points, 17 points, and 17 points. So he's averaging 12.3 points a game against Mike McDonald's defense in the last 3. And if you think, oh, well, they had a big game against them last year as well. They did. That was before Ernest Jones was here. That was before they changed to like Josh Jobe, Rayshon Jenkins. Like, there's a lot of personnel changes after that game. And they played them last year with those new players and held them to 17. And that's the defense you've got right now. So Kyle Shanahan does not want this smoke with Mike McDonald. I think that's pretty clear. Sure, I'll go through some of these as well. Doesn't hurt. So Brock Purdy, I don't know if you had heard, in the previous 3 games, the 49ers had only punted twice. They had 28 drives. They only punted twice. That was a 7% punt rate. Against the Seahawks, 4 punts in 8 drives, a 50% punt rate. I love it. This is so fun. So fun. You know what's so fun is flying home last night and seeing the 49ers fans that were coming home on the plane, just feeling the worst possible way. And knowing that, I wear my Seahawks gear yesterday. I usually don't. I mean, I'm a big fan, but I try not to wear the gear all the time. And I wanted to wear it yesterday. I wanted every 49ers fan just to see Seahawks colors and just feel a little bit worse that day. And that was pretty fun. This is a nice one. So for people that didn't see, I posted this as well. Would you be surprised to hear that the Seahawks have 2 of the top 3 graded running backs by PFF in the NFL? 2 of the top 3. Devon Achane for the Dolphins was the top graded running back at 91.0. The second best, Zach Charbonnet, 90.5. The third best, Ken Walker at 90.2. 2 of the top 3 on the same team, and those 2 combined for 171 yards rushing against the 49ers. Now, guys, you know this because you follow and you've been around, but we've been talking about that run game, finding some progress. Like, I started sharing, like, look at the EPA, look how this is climbing up, it's creeping up. Well, if you look at it from the last 3 weeks of the season, the Seahawks are like a top three rushing offense. They ran for over 160 yards in three straight games. They haven't done that in years. So I'm getting new news. Sorry, we'll get this new news. The Cardinals, the Arizona Cardinals, have fired Jonathan Gannon. He had a 15-36 record. It says zero playoff appearances. Yeah, generally 15-36 does not get you a playoff appearance. So the Cardinals, that absolute trash organization, continues to struggle. The losingest franchise in the history of the NFL. More losses than any other franchise. Yikes. Yeah, I don't know if they're going to fire their GM as well, but they might want to consider it. Although I think they did all right in this draft. We'll see. Although the Walter Nolan injury is a real bummer. Will Johnson, I think, is going to be a good one. I think there's some hope there, but I don't know, man. I don't see that team. You got to trust what you're going to do. Now you're looking at getting a new quarterback. Kyler Murray is probably going to get traded. It's a very important time in that franchise to figure this out. Do you feel really good about the GM who's doing it? And the thing is, the person who's deciding that is the owner, Bidwell, who's an absolute trash human. I wouldn't trust him to make a good decision. And that's why people should just be so grateful for Jody Allen and Burt Cold and the decisions that they have made. I guarantee you, that almost every other owner in the NFL would have kept Pete Carroll after a 9-8 season, right? Like a winning season. Guaranteed they would have kept him. They moved on, not just because of the way the season went, but most owners would have kept him because there was money to pay him still, a decent chunk of money. So they were going to pay him to not work for them. And most owners would be like, it's not worth it. They made that move. The Seahawks, there is no way the Seahawks would be where they are right now if Mike McDonald was not the coach. No way. So just thank your lucky stars. Let's keep going with some more fun graphics I've been working on. So the dark side defense turning out the lights on Christian McCaffrey. Week 16 and week 17. He had 146 scrimmage yards and then 181 scrimmage yards and three total touchdowns against the Seahawks, 57 yards from scrimmage, no touchdowns. And man, did he get rocked in this game. Absolutely rocked. I think that was my favorite part of this game, was how hard the Seahawks were hitting. I mean, that was so... like, that's what I love. And it's so often you're just like, can you just nail that guy? And then it's just, you know, they avoid it or you don't quite get a clean shot. There were just hit after hit. And a lot of them were coming in the middle of the field, in the scrum of mess of all the players in a run play. I think one of the ones that sticks out to me the most was a play where Ernest Jones hit Christian McCaffrey, kind of stood him up, and then Drake Thomas just comes flying down like an absolute freight train and just throttles McCaffrey. Drake Thomas, my God, has that guy been a absolute godsend at linebacker? I don't even think Tyrese Knight is a bad player. I think Tyrese Knight may be able to do a lot of amazing things. Like when he came back in after Drake Thomas was injured, he played fantastic football. This is Tyrese Knight was the guy that had the two strip sacks that led to DeMarcus Lawrence getting those two fumble returns. Like, you've got that guy on the bench and he might like have a lot of that in him. And Drake Thomas, though, has just been fantastic. I'll go through some of his numbers in a little bit, but like, that guy's so fun to watch. I've really enjoyed watching him play. One second. Okay. Yeah, I he's one of my favorite players on this team. I love all his preparation, and I love how fast he plays and how he just gets into the backfield. And it just seems like he just makes so many big plays. My kind of player. Love seeing it. Now, here's a little bit of the dark side defensive style I'm looking at. I'm going to take that green and turn it to be this Seahawks blue. I think that'll look better as a dark side styling, but I'm playing around with it. And this is a look at the last five games of the season. The Seahawks defense went against Bijan Robinson, Jonathan Taylor, Kyren Williams, Rico Dowdle, and Christian McCaffrey. Those are pretty good running backs in this league. They didn't allow a single explosive rushing play. No running plays of over 12 yards. Zero. Zero. Have you seen Bijan Robinson lately? Have you seen Christian McCaffrey against the Bears or against other teams? Like, they were like, after his bye week, this guy looks like the 2023 Offensive Player of the Year version of Christian McCaffrey. The Rams, the number one DVOA run offense. I don't know if they still are, but they were coming into that game. Jonathan Taylor, maybe the Offensive Player of the Year partway through the season. And like, to do that is just remarkable for this defense. So great stuff there. Here's one. A little bit of good news stuff. Ken Walker set a career high for scrimmage yards with 1,309 yards from scrimmage. That bests his rookie year. We had 1,215. So almost 100 more yards from scrimmage this year. That's with splitting reps. So I hope people recognize how valuable K9 has been. I still don't know what they're going to do in terms of re-signing him, but good stuff. Also, in case you missed it, JSN secured the Top Gun status as the leading receiver in the NFL with 1,793 yards. Puka Nacua did not catch him, ends up with 1,715. So JSN leads all receivers in receiving yards. Maybe he can be a number one. Maybe he can play outside. It seems like it's working. And this was the look at the top scoring defenses. Both through the full season, the Seahawks end up allowing 17.2 points per game. And the Texans are at 17.4. And then in the final six games since week 12, it's been 15 points per game. For the Seahawks, and that's even better than the Vikings, who are 15.6, and the Jags, who are 17.2. So, and as I said, other than the 37-point game, 7.6 points per game over that stretch. So lots of good stuff there. I think those are all the numbers I was going to go through there. I'm going to see if I missed any other super chats. I think there's some super chats on Venmo I should get. All right, this is from Michael Riggs. Stephen A. and Ryan Clark, Cam Newton, Dan Orlovsky screaming each other at the top of their lungs for 12 minutes about trusting Sam. It was hilarious. Welcome to our life. I mean, what I loved about that game from Sam Darnold was that it was a professional game. Jeff Simmons said that on our post-game show. It's the right term for it. It was just a managed game. It was the type of game he needed to have. And that doesn't mean he didn't do anything difficult. He made some great throws. He made some really big third down conversions. He ran the ball like effectively he decided to use his legs at the right time and to good effect. he dumped the ball off at the right times and the right players in a lot of situations. Generally, I thought he played really, like, I didn't say really well, but I think he played the type of game that you can win with. So I loved that from Sam Darnold. Let me check Venmo super chats before we start to wrap. And it's almost time for the Mike McDonald Show over on Seattle Sports with Brock and Salk. But let me check my super chats. All right. Yes, there are a few super chats here. Daniel Hansen says 49ers, more like crash of 29ers. All right. Thanks again for all that you do. Best podcast out there. Stay rad, my dude. Well, appreciate you, Daniel. Amit Guha says, what a season, man. Love to see all the 49ers fans cry about their injured defense. Still think Kubiak had some, let's say, interesting calls, especially on third down. On a positive note, this D is special. Justin Meyer says, Brian, absolutely love the show. It's been keeping me sane while I've been living in the Bay the past few months. Shout out to all the fans of the game tonight. Love the Hawk Blogger community. Yeah. Awesome. Like, the community is awesome. We've got only good people allowed, only kind people that treat each other well. If you start being mean to each other, you're kind of not welcome. And thanks to our mods, you know, like Amy Holmes and others who help keep things going in our chat and on Discord. Francisco Gonzalez, we not only destroyed the 49ers, we shook their whole fan base. Interesting watching their fans and reporters turn on their own team. I'll tell you, there was a guy, I don't know if it was a podcaster or a radio guy, but he did his setup in the press area, press box, and it was so loud, and he was just ripping the 49ers. He's ripping the front office for the lack of talent that they had been adding to this team, and that, like, that all the bad moves that they had made. And I think it's a little rich. I mean, I think the 49ers had a pretty good draft. It wasn't great, but I think it's pretty good. I think that they were playing for the number one seed in the playoffs in a year where they lost most of their best players and their quarterback from, like, to be like pissed at your front office after that game. That's bad. Like that's bad on any level. It's bad. So I happen to believe the 49ers are in trouble in terms of where their roster's going. That was a look at this 49ers team without Trent Williams. And I think you're going to have to look at this 49ers team without Trent Williams. I'm not sure how much longer he's going to play, and he's not playing at that high of a level, in my opinion, relative to where he used to be. Christian McCaffrey, this might be his last best year, honestly. Like, I don't think he can have a year like this where he's this kind of a workhorse and still stay healthy. I just don't believe it. So I think the 49ers are going to struggle. And I think that offensive line is going to struggle. And we'll see like how, I think the defense has some interesting players. I don't know how many of them are really blue chip players. When you lose a Talanoa Hufanga and a Dre Greenlaw, those guys were difference makers when they were healthy. They weren't always healthy, but they were difference makers when they were healthy. They haven't replaced them with guys at that level. Malik Mustafa, Jair Brown can be decent safeties. They're not all pros. Talanoa Hufanga was an all pro. And yeah, I'm not going to spend much more time on the 49ers, but I question where that team is from a setup perspective. I also would say that the Seahawks are not just the number one team in the NFC West now. I think they're set up to stay that way. The Rams are young and good, except at the quarterback position. Like, Matt Stafford's 37. He'll be 38 next year. I'd expect them to try to bring him back. I would. I mean, the guy should win MVP. But is he going to stay healthy again? Like, I don't know, man. Like, I do question whether the Rams are set up. Is Devontae Adams, I assume he's going to come back, but is he? yeah, anyway, we'll see. We'll see with the Rams. All right. I think I maybe saw one more super chat come in. Boklo says, do you think there's any chance of Pete raising the 12 man flag in the playoffs this year? No, 0.0% chance of that. But you know what? We will get one 12th flag raise in the divisional round. And then the tradition is the owner raises it for the NFC championship. Jody Allen hasn't had a chance to do that yet. It'd be pretty cool. She would get a deserved ovation for raising that 12th flag in the NFC championship game. Let's hope we get there, man. Like, I'm ready for another NFC championship. And look, the reality is the Seahawks have never lost a divisional playoff game or an NFC championship at home. They've never done it. Now, the last time they lost a home playoff game was in 2020 when COVID was going on and they hosted the Rams. There were no fans in the stands for that game. So I don't think that really counts. Now, that doesn't guarantee them, you know, that the Seahawks are going to win this game. Like, it is what it is. But that's the reality. The Seahawks have not ever lost a divisional home playoff game. And the next step is all of you, all of us, filling that stadium with Seahawks fans, selling your tickets if you're not going to Seahawks fans via hbtix.com. And when you're there, screaming your freaking heads off. In the huddle for the opponent team, not when they get to the line of scrimmage, in the huddle so that they have a hard time hearing the play call and communicating. That's where you get errors in terms of snap counts and guys jumping. Just absolutely losing your minds and then being quiet on offense. I will say it's very frustrating when you get fans starting the Seahawks chant or cheering when the Seahawks are on offense. That's supposed to be an advantage. Like, we're supposed to be quiet when the Seahawks are on offense. But man, honestly, there's a lot of responsibility in my mind for all of us now. The team has gotten to this point. It's our turn to carry them all the rest of the way. Like, fans can have that kind of an impact on the outcome of a game if you decide to. And the only fan base in the entire NFL that I think is capable of that is this one. So I really do hope people bring their absolute best in 2 weeks. So love it. All right, everybody. I've been going for almost 2 hours. I'll be back later today, most likely. We'll watch the Cable Thanos video together, and we'll do some unboxing of some Simply Seattle stuff. Also, we'll have the Mike McDonald show here in about 10 minutes over with Brock and Salk, and then the Mike McDonald press conference, 3:30 today. So tons and tons and tons of good stuff. Tuesday, tomorrow, we will have Matt Hasselback to talk about this. And I haven't figured out the rest of the week yet. I have some ideas, but we'll keep going. Have a wonderful, wonderful day. I will probably see you soon. Until then, this has been your daily episode of Hawkwire Mornings. Take care.